Hello, friends. This is The Environment Show. Welcome. The Washington-based research group World Watch Institute each year publishes an exhaustive series of essays on the state of the world. World Watch President Lester Brown is calling for a new world order, quite different from the one proposed by President Bush. And debate over the national energy strategy continues. Tennessee Senator Albert Gore is highly critical.
It's a little bit like a person who's addicted to alcohol or drugs confronting his problem, studying it for a year and a half, and then concluding that the main problem is he just doesn't have enough of it. That's essentially what the president has done where energy is concerned.
Also news this time from Alaska. These stories and more on The Environment Show coming up. We hope you'll stay tuned. The Environment Show is a national production of WAMC, made possible by the J.M. Kaplan Fund of New York. This is Bruce Robertson. Recently, Energy Secretary James Watkins testified before a Senate Energy Subcommittee that President Bush would veto any legislation on energy that barred oil exploration and drilling in the Arctic Wildlife Refuge in Alaska. The area of the North Shore of Alaska is said to harbor perhaps over 9 billion barrels of oil and would, if tapped, greatly reduce our imports on foreign oil. Energy industry officials generally agree with the president that we must not overlook this potentially vast reserve. However, many opponents take the view expressed by Tennessee Senator Albert Gore.
The president has studied this problem and come up with a response that's just breathtakingly dumb, in my opinion, with all due respect. It's a little bit like a person who's addicted to alcohol or drugs confronting his problem, studying it for a year and a half, and then concluding that the main problem is he just doesn't have enough of it. That's essentially what the president has done where energy is concerned. All of the experts, both Democratic and Republican, told his energy secretary that conservation and energy efficiency are the two strategies that will work. And that's what the Secretary of Energy recommended to the president. But the president discarded that advice and emphasized instead a simple strategy of getting more and more fossil fuels. And ironically, the analysis, bipartisan, shows that if this strategy is followed, our dependence on Middle Eastern oil will actually increase significantly. So what is the purpose of putting out a strategy like this? It doesn't make any sense, and it doesn't respond to what the country wants to do. All the public hearings over the last year and a half have indicated that the American people are ready to move on conservation and energy efficiency, but the president is leading in the wrong direction. This strategy is a little bit like listening to a Joe Isuzu commercial. The president says that he will support state conservation and efficiency initiatives, and then he submits a budget that practically zeroes out all the money for those initiatives. He says that he's going to be protective of the environment, but then he says that he'll veto anything that doesn't open up to oil drilling, one of the last pristine wilderness areas we have. And although it hadn't gotten much publicity, he has committed to issuing an executive order that gives OMB, the Office of Management and Budget, authority to modify all environmental regulations if they slow down the acquisition of more and more oil. This is a producing plan with the environment ignored, with conservation and efficiency ignored, and with the American people ignored.
Yet the president's plan would have to be sort of ratified, as it were, by you and your colleagues, and many from Capitol Hill almost immediately met the plan with outcries of opposition and disbelief, as you just have outlined yourself. Other subcommittees, other senators, colleagues over in the House as well, have put forward alternative plans. What would be the leading titles in an energy plan that you would craft, and how would you advance it past the lobbyists from both the energy industry and also environmentalists?
Well, we should have a strategy that emphasizes energy efficiency, renewable energy technologies, conservation, efficiency standards for appliances and lighting and mileage requirements for automobiles to get better miles. There's no reason why we ought to have an auto fleet running around getting 18, 20 miles a gallon when the technology is here to have cars that get 40, 50 miles a gallon and more. And we ought to be encouraging the development of substitutes for oil instead of just focusing on getting more oil. Now, unfortunately, if you look at the task of passing an energy strategy into law, you have to acknowledge that presidential leadership is required. And one of the reasons why there was such disappointment in the president's policy is that he made it clear he is simply not going to provide the leadership that we need. So we'll have a battle royal, and we'll fight about this for the next couple of years and hope for a breakthrough, and hope in this case that the president will see the light and finally accept the advice of his own energy secretary and the American people and provide some leadership.
Tennessee Democratic Senator Albert Gore, now in his second term in the Senate, Gore serves on the Commerce Committee, the Joint Economic Committee, and the Armed Services Committee. He is also chairman of the Committee on Science and Technology. He tells us that he is not yet sure whether he will be running again in the next presidential race. Back to the energy story. President Bush, in releasing his plan, says he believes it is a balanced plan. Dr. Michael Caines, chief economist and energy specialist with the American Petroleum Institute, agrees.
What we were looking for was a balanced approach in which there were initiatives on the production side, initiatives on the conservation side. There was something in research and development on new sources of energy. And pretty much we would say that is what the president has proposed. We favor a number of the things that are in the energy plan. We would question one or two of them, but by and large, we think it's something to work with.
However, the mainline environmentalists and many, many voices in a bipartisan fashion on Capitol Hill have disagreed with that, saying that it quite is not a balanced package. It seems to eliminate, according to many, a real long-needed, much-sought-after emphasis on conservation and turning to alternative and renewable fuels. So what is your response to those critics?
Well, of course, one of the tests that's used is whether the corporate average fuel economy standards are in the proposals or not. And, of course, what the president is proposing is to wait the outcome of a National Academy of Sciences study of that matter to see what is feasible, what is economic, that kind of thing. There is a proposal that we would favor that deals with conservation in the plan, and that is to try to encourage the use of incentives to get older cars, fuel inefficient cars, and also generally cars that are highly polluting, off the roads, find ways to get them off the roads faster than otherwise. That seems to us a very sensible conservation initiative. As far as alternate fuels goes, there are a couple of things in there, and if there is anything that we would question, it is that. There is a proposal, for example, to mandate that fleets over a given size would have to use alternate fuels, given there's a certain year and kind of a schedule at which they would come in. If economics and economic efficiency is a criterion, and we would say it should be, then that is very questionable whether that is going to be a good thing to do or not. Some of that was taken up in the Clean Air Act, and there are provisions in the Clean Air Act to bring in alternate fuels for purposes of reducing air emissions. That's something else entirely. But to do it for merely to get the alternate fuels into the market at any cost, as seems to be implied by the initiative in the National Energy Strategy, that we would question.
You say get them on at any cost or included at any cost. You seem to be coming back again and again to the notion that some of the problems and challenges are less environmental and more economic.
Well, it seems to us sensible that you want to do things that are efficient to do. We favor, for example, the opening up of the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge and some offshore properties and so on, because we think they are very economically efficient things to do, that you can protect the environment and you can increase wealth, incomes, jobs, and so on in the United States at the same time. So those things we think are very sensible. We think there are conservation initiatives that are in there that are sensible as well, and we think the research and development will have a payoff and therefore is a good idea. Where we question is where there is a mandate, because a mandate means you have to do it regardless of what the economic consequences are.
What about the sort of counter-argument to the opening up of the Arctic Wildlife Refuge and whatever amount of oil is beneath that territory, that whatever oil is there, whatever oil is offshore, whatever oil remains in any of the existing wells around the nation and for domestic supply, indeed, even on a global basis, the fossil fuel is a source of diminishing, dwindling reserves. The more we use, the less we are going to have, and the more we continue to use them and rely on them and not turn our scientific know-how to developing alternative and renewable fuels, that at some point we're just simply going to run out of fossil fuels.
Well, first of all, we would say you should do a wide variety of things. You should not only open up domestic properties, but you should be trying to develop alternate fuels. You should be doing whatever research is necessary to get some of these fuels economic. You should be doing things on the conservation side. There's a wide variety of measures that make sense, and you certainly shouldn't just focus on one or two of them. As far as the notion of running out, while in some physical sense there's a finite quantity of resources on the planet, the entire history of the oil industry has been one in which people have predicted that we would run out or that the amount of resources would dwindle, and in fact, in which the resources have expanded continuously. And indeed, I think at the present time we have more known oil reserves worldwide than we ever have in the history of the world.
But nevertheless, we have more known, but there is no more being made, and at some point we would run out of them, and at some point we don't want to get down to the 11th hour and the 59th minute of the 11th hour to say, oh boy, we should have tried to figure out a way out of this predicament.
Sure. Well, of course that's true, but what actually happens is that we begin to use up the less expensive or easier to reach, cheaper reserves, and then we start to go to the more expensive sources, such as those in the Arctic regions or offshore and so on. And then we develop technology, and it turns out that so far we've been able to develop technology to reduce the costs of obtaining these initially higher cost sources. We've been able to do that fast enough to keep the costs actually dropping over the years. That is, the real costs of energy have actually been dropping over most of the history of energy. And there's no reason to think that it will become any different. New technologies are being developed all the time. For example, in the last few years, we've developed a way of drilling for oil and gas on a horizontal plane as opposed to vertically, and it's opened up new fields and a lot more recovery of existing fields, and so we've become much more efficient at recovering what we know is there.
Dr. Michael Caines at the American Petroleum Institute in Washington, he says we must be careful implementing conservation measures. Between the end of World War II and 1973, for example, energy prices were fairly low and quite stable. During that time, the gross national product was robust for the most part. After the oil embargoes of the 1970s, energy prices soared, energy conservation measures were developed rapidly, and at the same time, the GNP slowed to a recessionary pace. Says Keynes, there needs to be a balance between conservation and commerce. Finding that balance, says Senator Gore, could take a very long time. This is Bruce Robertson. Oil has been pumping across the Alaska wilderness for years now, from the oil-rich North Shore at Prudhoe Bay to the oil terminals in southern Alaska, principally at Valdez. Environmentalists have been studying the transport of this oil and its effects on the ecosystem, noting damage done not only by the oil itself, but from the presence of humans in such dense populations as created by the oil drilling community brought to the region. With renewed talk of oil exploration and drilling in the same area, I reached Ann Rothy, Regional Director of the National Wildlife Federation Office in Anchorage, to find out what her organization plans to do should the drilling start.
Well, I think that we hope that that likelihood does not come to pass. I think we'd have to have some very serious restrictions on the type of seasonal activity. We'd have to have some changes in the way the industry operates in Prudhoe. We wouldn't want to see them operate the same way in the Arctic Refuge in terms of water quality problems, air quality problems, think there would have to be some very stringent guidelines set, and not only guidelines set, but it's even more important to make sure that those guidelines are adhered to, and that means having the funding and the manpower on the part of the regulatory agencies to see that those guidelines are met. The real problem that we see in Prudhoe with many of the air quality and water quality issues is that the regulatory agencies, the state and federal regulatory agencies, simply don't have the manpower and the finances to regulate properly. We don't want to see that happen again.
Rothy says, furthermore, that lack of regulatory policy enforcement is one problem. She tells us of another problem, though, that has presented itself.
I just came from a meeting with some state regulatory agency personnel, and we were talking about the problem of a loss of hydrocarbon vapors out of oil as it's loaded onto tankers at Valdez. Many of the gas of the oil companies on the North Slope add liquid natural gas components or natural gas components to the oil that they pump into the pipeline to increase the velocity of the flow, and as a way of getting rid of what right now, since we don't have a gas pipeline, is excess. And we were looking at the figures. It's some 42,000 tons of hydrocarbon emissions a year from loading oil tankers at Valdez, and we got to thinking about the loss, the waste of energy. If we could find a way, just for some reason it stuck in my mind, that figure and the awesome amount of natural gas that's just vented to the atmosphere at Valdez, and how it makes no sense to me whatsoever that we're undertaking that kind of waste and looking to develop or exploit all of our domestic resources.
Ann Rothy at the National Wildlife Federation office in Anchorage, Alaska. Incidentally, Rothy is also head of a citizen advisory council formed by the Alyeska Pipeline Company in response to an order by the state of Alaska that the company formulate an aggressive oil spill cleanup and prevention plan. The advisory council will receive an annual funding appropriation from Alyeska of $2 million for as long as there is oil flowing through the pipeline. This is Bruce Robertson. In Fort Collins, Colorado, residents who support an energy policy based more on conservation and renewable resources and less on oil dependency and war are bringing their Peace Energy Initiative before the people on a city election ballot April 2nd. Robert Terrell has more.
While the Fort Collins mayor supports the effort, saying war is no longer a means of solving international problems, there are council members openly opposed to the measure. One council member, Chuck Mabry, not only doesn't want Fort Collins associated with the likes of Berkeley, Cambridge, and Boulder, where similar initiatives were passed by their city councils, but he says a favorable vote would hurt America's war effort.
I think it's unfortunate. I don't support it, and I will be voting against it at the polls on April 2nd, primarily because I think that it communicates the wrong message to the rest of the community, the rest of the country, the rest of the state.
Mabry also makes a clear distinction between the peace issue and the second section of the initiative, calling for a national energy policy utilizing conservation and renewable resources. Initiative organizer Joe Stern sees it differently.
Suppose the principal export in the Middle East was broccoli. Do you think we would have gone to war?
Joe says developing solar energy could greatly help the western region.
The sun shines over 300 days a year in Fort Collins, and if there was a return of the tax credits for solar installations such as what we had prior to 1980, I think it would make a tremendous difference in imported oil that we need.
Joe is in agreement with Colorado State University's Solar Energy Applications Lab Director, Dr. Doug Hiddle. Hiddle's group already has an experimental zero-energy office building in the works using solar and other energy-efficient technologies.
We think we'll probably use about half the energy use of the best buildings that were demonstrated about 10 years ago, and probably about a fourth or less of the energy that a commercial building would use here in Denver. Now, once we finish demonstrating how energy conserving it will be, we're planning to add photovoltaics and active solar heating technology to it to reduce the energy use even further.
Hiddle says the steady decline of financial support for such projects through the Reagan years greatly hampers renewable energy research now. He says that in itself calls for a national energy policy with a strong emphasis on conservation of existing fossil fuels and exploration of renewable resources. Meanwhile, supporters of both sides of the Peace Energy Initiative say they will be trying to get the voters to the polls. I'm Robert Terrell.
Robert Terrell reports for the High Plains News Service, a project of the Western Organization of Resource Councils based in Billings, Montana. With the end of armed conflict in the Persian Gulf, attention can now be turned once again to the end of the Cold War last year. The world was only just beginning to assess the implications of that change when last August Saddam Hussein invaded Kuwait. The Cold War had dominated world politics for over four decades and had set the agenda for nearly every nation, certainly in Europe and North America. Writing in the State of the World report published by World Watch Institute, Lester Brown, the organization's president, says, "We are now at one of those rare points in history, a time of great change, a time when change is as unpredictable as it is inevitable." The Institute each year publishes its exhaustive report titled The State of the World. Mr. Brown joins us now. In your report last year in The State of the World, you wrote that we had great promise of change, but little real change was experienced. This year, you write in your contributed article, on the environmental front, the situation could hardly be worse. You write, every major indicator shows a deterioration in the natural systems. Forests are shrinking, deserts expanding, croplands losing topsoil, the stratospheric ozone layer continues to thin, and the list goes on. It sounds like we haven't made very much progress towards sustainability.
We've not made very much real progress. We have local success stories here and there around the world, but at the global level, all the major trends are headed in the wrong direction. And these trends are beginning to affect human health. They're beginning to affect agriculture. Unless we can get them turned around soon, they could lead to a decline in living standards in more and more areas of the world, as they're already doing, for example, in sub-Saharan Africa, and in the Aral Sea Basin of the Soviet Union.
Your article in State of the World is titled The New World Order. That's a phrase, of course, also familiar to many, as used by President Bush, but presumably for an entirely different image. Tell us about your proposal.
Well, in effect, we contrast the old world order, which was the one dominated by the Cold War, with the new world order that's emerging. I think everyone pretty well agrees that the Cold War is now history. The Warsaw Pact has been dismantled. The two Germanies have been reunited. The NATO forces are phasing down their troop strength in Europe. The Cold War era that lasted for roughly four decades, from, say, 1950 to 1990, is now history. The organizing principle during that period was ideological conflict. It polarized the world and, in so doing, organized it. It established national priorities. It determined the shape of international coalitions, and it shaped the foreign policy of most of the countries in the world to a substantial degree, and to some in a very dominant way. That's over now. And the question is, what will the new world order be like? What will be its organizing principle? We think that environmental issues are going to move back to center stage, and we also feel that environmental sustainability is likely to emerge as the organizing principle of the new world order. We expect that there will be new environmental alliances emerging. They would be comparable to the military alliances of the Cold War era. For example, we could see countries around the Baltic Sea organizing to try and clean it up and save it. We could see countries in the Indian subcontinent mounting a joint effort to reforest the Himalayas, because that would be in the interest of the countries in the Himalayas, such as Nepal, as well as the countries that are downstream from the rivers that originate in the Himalayas. We could see, indeed we are seeing, a coalition of an alliance of island countries emerge, because these are countries that feel particularly threatened by global warming and rising sea level. If sea level rises as projected, with a business as usual, with a continuation of a business as usual energy policy, some of these countries will not exist a century from now. So there are more than 30 of these groups have bound themselves together in a new international lobbying effort to try and get countries like the United States to begin phasing out fossil fuels and reducing the chance that their homelands will be inundated. We expect that environmental diplomacy will occupy a growing share of the time of the international diplomatic community, in much the same way that that military concerns and the ideological conflict took much of the time of diplomats during the four decades from 1950 to 1990. So we think of necessity that environmental sustainability will become the new organizing principle, that international agreements will concentrate much more on environmental issues like stabilizing climate or phasing out CFCs or protecting biological diversity. The interesting contrast between the old order and the new order that we think will emerge lies in the objectives. In the old order, the objective always to change was to change someone else's values and behavior. In the new order, success in the battle to save the planet, in effect, will depend on changing our own values and behavior. And that's a far more difficult undertaking.
Lester Brown, president of World Watch Institute in Washington. The State of the World is co-authored by the Institute's research staff. Next week, we'll continue our conversation with Mr. Brown, find out more about his proposal to replace income taxes with environmental taxes. We hope you'll be listening. And that's our show for this week. We hope you enjoyed this edition of The Environment Show. This has been a WAMC national production. Dr. Alan Shartok, executive producer. This is Bruce Robertson. The Environment Show is made possible by the J.M. Kaplan Fund of New York.